This is the MDT podcast.
A podcast for all healthcare professionals working with older adults. We are a multidisciplinary team educating about aging, MDT.
The MDT is brought to you by the Hearing Aid podcast team. We focus on a different topic each week to work with you to enhance your knowledge to help you look after older people. Hello and welcome to the Christmas episode of the MDT. We are SJ, the physio's house in Eastbourne. There are Christmas decorations up and it's awesome. We're going to go around and say who from the faculty is here and introduce them and so you can hear from them.
I'm Tracy CK, occupational therapist.
Sarah Jane Ryan, physiotherapist.
Claire Watson, nurse. Oh no, Claire Gillespie, nurse.
Jackie Bell, social worker.
Mairead O'Malley, pharmacist.
Great, and that's not that Claire doesn't know who she is. She just got married, so that's a good thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a quiz. We've been fairly loose in the definition of the quiz. We've got different styles of questions and clues. So bear with us, we're just going to go round. And Ian is not with us, a bit like Santa Claus, he doesn't really exist. So we're just going to crack on. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first if you like.
Claire's going to go first. Claire's got the most clues, which we're very excited about.
Where should I live to add 11 years extra to my life?
Japan.
Any more in Japan?
I mean, that's a good answer because they have really long... Yeah, they've got a long life expectancy, haven't they? Yeah.
Mediterranean as well, isn't it? Was it the oldest person today's birthday? She's 117.
Ooh. It's a specific island off Japan, is that right? Is that what you're talking about?
Okay, so to make a bit of context to it, maybe, the life expectancy in the UK as of today is, if you're a woman, it's 82 years. And the area, bizarrely, is Camden, where you're most likely to, highest expectancy to longest life expectancy. Women from Camden. I'm like talking out to you.
Wanted to go to Camden.
Camden. Let's move.
What about South America?
Okay, so in the UK, life expectancy is 82 years for a woman, and interestingly, women from Camden are most likely to have the longest life expectancy, which is interesting because our recording's done in Camden.
Yeah.
And for men,
I wouldn't have thought that because it's not. No, it doesn't seem like the richest area, but I guess around there is maybe quite affluent if you can afford to actually buy a house in Camden, perhaps. Maybe.
Yeah, not sure really. And for a man, it's 79 years. So in Japan, it's 83 years. But I asked for 11. But my question was, where would I live for an extra 11 years?
South America, I'm on now. Am I warm? Italy.
Anyone?
That's a no from Claire.
And Japan was a no-go because
I think Japan was a no-go.
Should we start continents?
Yeah.
Are we in Europe?
We're in Europe.
Oh wow! Okay.
Greece.
Norway. I was going to say Norway or Sweden.
Greece.
But a very specific island in Greece.
Ios.
Called Icaria.
Wow.
It was named after the mythological character who flew too close to the sun. The longevity of the islander's population has been significantly proven, and this has been put down to a local diet of rich beans and local vegetables that are grown on the island. And they eat lots of potatoes and goat's milk, and they have very little meat and hardly any refined sugar.
The Irish contingent in the room.
I'm very excited about this. Though we don't live that long.
I think that might be the whiskey.
I've got to say, that's the
They also said that one of the scientific facts was that they nap in the afternoons, which I'm quite keen on.
I'm totally pro that.
Absolutely. They interviewed one gentleman on the island and he said, why do you think that the life expectancy is so long here? And he says, I never go home to my wife when I'm drunk.
That's why there's a short life expectancy in Ireland.
So if I wanted to add 11 years to my life, I would move to Icaria.
Nice. Average temperature there?
As today.
Warmer than here.
Okay. I like that, that's a good one. Okay, who's going to go next?
I've got a slight Greek theme to mine. So I've got three clues and then
one that kind of more or less tells you what it is. I'm going to start with these three clues and see if you can go there with me. So each of us have one of four in most people. You usually arrive to the party between 17 and 25 years. This is a positive aspect of getting older.
We usually have between one and four.
Wisdom teeth.
Oh my God! Oh,
yes! Get in!
She's too bright.
That has got competition there.
And my other ones were, another word for this goes well with pork. I should have started with that one too.
Yeah.
What's that?
The silence that followed that.
What herb goes well with pork?
I was going to say County Cork.
Going off piece there. Any idea?
Don't eat pork. No.
Sage.
Ah, oh, it was really was a cryptic.
Yeah. And then the ancient Greeks considered this to be very important. In fact, they had two goddesses dedicated to wisdom.
Mm. Not wisdom tea.
Actually, wouldn't have got it with any of the other two clues.
I thought I was being the most cryptic with the first one. Got it. I started with that one.
I've got the urge to do my cryptic one.
All right, go on then. All right.
A small famous university on the move. So it's something that can be used by a nurse, a physio, an occupational therapist, a care assistant.
So an item that's also the name of a small university that's on the move.
It's for people with mobility problems.
Stunned silence.
It's named after one of the two top universities in England.
Two top universities.
Named after one of them.
Oxford?
Yes, it depends on your mood.
Oxford.
A small famous university on the move.
Something to do with the boat race?
It's used by people from, like, can you be used by occupational therapists, physiotherapists? So it's like a mobility aid, I'm assuming?
It's a type of hoist.
Oh my goodness. An Oxford hoist.
And the Oxford mini hoist, a small university on the move. This can be used, it's very versatile, and it can be used in the hospital or in the home.
Okay. That was a good one.
That is good. Tracy's very pleased that we were all looking around. Okay. So what is it? I've never heard of that one.
The Oxford mini hoist is well designed, well manufactured, high quality, tremendously reliable and versatile. Represents excellent value for money. Its compact nature and its lightweight construction combines its well-positioned wheels to make it very manoeuvrable and ideal for use at home. And they've used it with my dad, and it's very good in the home. It's a small hoist.
Very neat hoist
that you can take into the home and to keep somebody in, living at home as long as possible.
I like that. They were really good clues as well. Mm. Very good clues.
So I have a question, but it's not cryptic. But I thought it was a bit of a fun one.
Yeah.
Do it.
So what is the only word in the English language that has an X, Y and Z in order?
Is this related to positive aspects of aging?
Could be.
No, it's just from having obscure knowledge.
Genes? Is it something?
No, it has X, Y and Z in the word, but they're in the order. X, Y, and Z, the correct order.
It's one word,
yeah. And it's the only word in the English language that has them in the correct order.
Is it something to do with exercises?
No.
Is it a drug?
It is a drug.
Ah. What do we know? Inside knowledge.
Go on, Joe.
I suppose, for coming from pharmacy.
So it's a drug that can make you sleepy. But it's not prescribed usually for sleep.
Well, I can go with Peridone.
Not far off.
It's got a Z in it.
Not far off.
Prochlorperazine.
No.
There's no X in that, is there?
Shall I tell you?
Yeah.
It's hydroxyzine.
Ah, yeah, we don't use that very often.
No, we don't. But you'd be quite surprised the amount of people that that are still on it, that has been prescribed as an antihistamine of old, and they still take it and they find that it really helps them to sleep. But it's quite topical at the moment just because of the anticholinergic burden and the risk to older patients. So It's quite the, one of the things that we're really hot on in terms of reviewing all of those drugs with anticholinergic burden. Mm.
Mm. And is it easy for people to come off or not so much?
As with anything, it depends. As with anything, it depends. It depends how long the patient's been on it, and actually whether they're using it for sleep, because actually coming off it can be quite difficult in terms of the effects that it would have then on their sleeping patterns. Mm-hmm. So advising sleep hygiene is really important when taking people off it. But usually I like to titrate down anyway.
And what's it normally prescribed for?
So the only reason it would be prescribed now is really bad, like itch or something like that, where they need an antihistamine that's mm-hmm. slightly stronger than your across-the-counter mm-hmm. Pyriton, loratadine. But interestingly, loratadine and cetirizine both have anticholinergic burden as well.
Yeah, so not much better.
So not if you look at the modified anticholinergic risk scale, hydroxyzine is a 3, whereas the other two are... a 2 or a 1, I think, so not as bad.
Good word fact.
Wow. Yeah. It is a good word fact.
I like it.
I'll try and remember that one.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in with one next from Wendy Grosner, who is one of the nurses on our faculty who can't be here today. Her clue comes in the forms of I am. Okay, so I am colourless.
Liquid.
Well, the second clue is I can be either a solid or a liquid.
Water.
Oh. Yeah. So the third clue is 2/3 of my body is made of this. Oh. I didn't want any jokes about that. This is water. The reason that she wanted to bring that up, because it's really important, because it makes up so much of the body, and there's so many insensible losses that you have in a day, it's really important to keep hydrated. In the winter, especially in the summer as well, you need to drink about 2 or 3 litres a day, depending on how big you are. I think the grossest fact that I learned doing the MDT podcast is that, was it 250 mils or 500 mils of fluid is lost through your feet each day?
Wow.
Oh. I didn't like that fact at all. I still don't like it. But anyway, so you know, your feet are losing that much, you've got to drink plenty in the day. So yeah, that's from Wendy.
Yeah.
You better wash your socks as well. Sorry for bringing it down. You've got a game, haven't you?
Yes, Claire? I do.
Stereotypes. Forgive us if this isn't very PC.
So
it's Christmas, let's go wild.
What I've done, kind of based on Articulate, is I have written down professionals on little bits of paper, and we're going to pick the piece of paper, and then we're going to describe the stereotype related to that healthcare professional, and you can use like maybe what food they would eat, what they would wear, what their behaviour might be like, what their personality might be like.
They might eat.
Yeah, you know.
Oh my god. Okay. Very obvious. Cool. Sorry, the UK.
So
we're gonna undo all that good understanding work that we just did.
So I thought we'd just pick one up and then start describing, and then we can all just shout out what we think that is.
Yeah.
Possibly would have a protein shake. Maybe mid-morning. Possibly would eat granola.
Doctor. God. Medic.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I think you're in a little bit physio.
I is a physio.
Oh, no way. I'm going to look for your granola.
I'm showing a physio.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they're known for being super healthy, aren't they?
This is true.
There's a lot of wear runners to work.
Yeah. There's a lot of sugar in granola.
I'm not saying that all physios eat it or should eat it.
I was going to go that old dietitian.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's
the
good.
It was the protein shake that I was like,
I could understand.
I'm thinking of all the like really healthy male doctors that are coming out with like YouTube cooking things and
Yeah,
where my brain was going on that.
It's what's his name? The healthy doctor or something. Healthy kitchen?
Healthy kitchen.
Healthy kitchen.
I think this professional would go on holiday in Greece and drink ouzo.
Ooh.
And dance the night away under the stars.
So short.
Ooh.
I'm off.
She has a look at someone that goes to Greece a
lot. So a liberated specialty.
I'm warm with social work.
They work with social workers, I think.
Jeans, like social workers, but men probably wear earrings.
Mental health nurse.
I knew I was on the list.
It's not bad.
I love that. Going to Greece and drinking under the stars. I love that. Drinking ouzo.
They're saying they're quite mentally liberated.
Yeah.
I always tell the mental, when students come down the stairs, I always know if they're mental health nurse students and they're not general, you know.
The canteen is very interesting.
And if I see them in the, just the way they walk into the car park and block my space, that tends to be mental health nurses chilling out.
Could you demonstrate the mental health nurse walk?
General nurses would be more
brisk,
structured.
More brisk, yeah. The purpose.
Who's going next?
Well, we should probably, this clue would be pretty easy then if I just said brisk walking.
Physical nurse.
You'd get it straight away, wouldn't you? That generalisation.
Go on, Jane.
Okay, I've got this person would be very particular.
Pharmacist.
Yes. Self-identified.
There we go.
I was hoping you were going to say with liked, like chemistry set.
I was going to say like liked looking stuff up, sometimes wearing white coats, that kind of thing.
I did have a chemistry set when I was a kid.
It's my favourite
toy.
It was destiny.
I have one. And I have not spent a large time with this group of professionals. So,
even better.
Other pharmacists.
thank you.
Even funnier.
So this group of professionals would be very kind, very caring, have a very different approach to patients than certainly my profession. Possibly slightly alternative.
I was going to say GPs until that.
No, slightly alternative.
GPs.
No. I can't really think of anything else.
What would they eat?
I love that. That's a key clue for you.
I think it's really telling.
I guess regular food. I can't see that they would eat anything, particularly out there.
Nurses.
I mean,
they wouldn't have protein bars.
No, they don't strike me as the type that would be eating protein bars.
And nurses always have like the hand in a box of chocolates. So
yeah, it's not a physical or mental health nurse, and it's not a
social worker.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I'm assuming that's an alternative. I was just avoiding saying.
Well, I have, as I said, I haven't spent huge amounts
of regular food. That's
fine. Regular food. I've not spent huge amounts of time with social workers.
But are quite partial to chocolates as well. I have to say.
Well, I haven't spent enough time to really study their traits as a profession, really.
Yeah, the classic was the 2CV, wasn't it?
I reckon mine eat a lot of lentils.
Lentils?
Lentils.
Ooh.
Dietitians.
No.
Speech and language.
Where did lentils and speech and language come in your head?
They're always a little bit quirky as well, aren't they, speech and language?
Mm-hmm.
They tell us speech and language.
How do they walk?
I wish you were doing this by video.
I know.
His actions.
That was used to be physios at the hairband and the pearls.
Yeah.
Not all the speech and language therapists I've seen have been pearls, but they tend to be quite well done with quite a style. Yeah.
Mm. Where would they go on holiday?
I reckon they'd go. Like, glamping maybe, or
ooh,
they might go and build a house in some far-flung place and give back.
What, an OT?
Yeah.
I'm going to go and raid the lentil cupboard. I'm going to tell the whole OT team to stop eating lentils.
You tell them all tomorrow that I presumed they all
eat lentils. Do you think we all eat lentils?
No, I just think you all are pretty vegetarian.
Apologies to all OTs listening.
Sorry, OT.
Who is vegetarian?
Well, I had to go with somebody with the food, and I didn't know where
think we should keep going and finish this group of...
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've got one, and they are at the other end of the spectrum. to us as a group.
I didn't think you said that out loud.
They would probably eat a lot of chocolate as well.
Dietitian?
No. Quite often in the middle of the night, I think.
Theatre assistant D type person?
No.
No.
They would go on holiday, I think somewhere hot. I don't think that helps you to work out who this person is. They usually wear a uniform, not always. Can work in the community as well as in the hospital. Usually seeing someone through a kind of longer period.
I wrote these and I don't know who this is.
As in, by longer period, I mean than me. In acute hospital, seeing someone for a short period of time. Through one specific thing. No.
It can't be a midwife because we're doing it elderly.
It is midwife.
Oh. Curveball, Claire.
Yeah.
Eating chocolate in the middle of the night.
I didn't know
because they're
a labour ward. With MDT. I suppose.
Okay, this one, this person would actually probably just go on holiday anywhere where there was really good food.
Dietitian.
Yeah.
This person will go on exotic holidays, drink port.
Consultant geriatrician.
Absolutely. That's all I do.
Can she have that then? What is a consultant geriatrician?
A doctor.
I mean, this is not a philosophical one.
Just a doctor. Oh. Well, I have one. These very much so are the complete opposite end of the spectrum of everyone sitting around this table. I imagine the lady version eats salad, and maybe the male contingent of this profession would eat something a little bit more hearty. They definitely go on the super expensive, super long holidays to the places where none of us mere mortals can afford in our lifetime. they like some power.
Managers?
Hospital managers. Yes.
They eat salad or they eat more things.
they eat salad. They're women hospital managers, they're into salads and
be
you
careful
know,
now, Marie.
The healthy stuff. It's not a criticism. They love
to eat this.
Well, no, it's not a criticism. But yeah.
Long holidays, far from places.
Yeah.
Any more?
I'm going to say cuddly, warm cake.
Cuddly, warm cake.
I don't think I've ever cuddled my GP.
But generally, they're warmer.
Are they?
My husband's a GP.
Is he cuddly? GP is very nice.
Liking cake.
Yeah.
You got it.
You must have really intense 15-minute consultations with your GP.
I said 15 minutes, not 10.
Oh, are they supposed to be 10?
You can request that for special patients. Okay.
That's a whole other episode.
Okay, so we'll probably be wearing Nike trainers. And we'll probably have a backpack on, work backpack, but have maybe like a designer bag in the staff room.
Paramedic.
We'll probably have really good like teeth, like quite clean, straight white teeth.
Like an SHO.
A dentist.
Why do they carry backpacks?
Dentist.
Because they live in the hospital, but they want to be ready to go out at any time.
And they
really
focus on their teeth.
It's not a dentist.
Loving the insights into your mind, though.
You are frightening us.
And probably shops in Zara. And probably gets like food from Marks Spencer's on a Friday.
Anything to do with their clinical role?
Is this the psychologist?
Probably goes on holiday to Thailand.
Do they work in an acute trust or community trust?
Either.
Oh, okay.
They can be based either.
Do they do shift work?
Tends to be probably more 9 to 5. Probably more like 8 to 6.
Now the speech therapist.
Yes. Is that all of them? What's this one here?
I like that. Do speech therapists have good teeth? I've never noticed that.
It's
a study waiting to be done.
Very focused.
Right? Yeah.
Very
clipped. This is something that reduces hypertension, lowers your blood pressure, increases your health and well-being.
Exercise.
Burns more calories.
Cardio.
Oh, I know this one. When you power walk.
Slows cognitive decline.
Oh, not power walking.
Increases life expectancy. In 2010, 25% of Americans over 55 did it.
Swimming.
Dance.
I've no idea.
Ian will love me for this. Volunteering. We can go to today's research on aging, issue 21, August 2011, volunteers and health for aging population study.
Lovely. That's really good. Okay, I'm going to go with a clue from
I don't know how to say. Doesn't exist anymore.
He must not be named.
It's your other personality, it's fine.
So now we're going to go for a question from He Who Shall Not Be Named, Santa Claus. These four-legged friends help your heart.
Dogs.
Yeah, but it's kind of a cryptic thing, so it's a bit like QI with Stephen Fry, like that kind of clue. Like, so it's something to do with pets, but these four-legged friends help your heart.
They'd be therapy pets. Without it can't encompass like cats and bunnies and deer.
Horses.
Do bunnies have four legs?
Horses, dogs, cats.
I'm not an animal person.
Yes, all of these. Yeah, so this is about pets in general and how they can help. Does anyone know anything about how they might help your heart?
Calming and relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Fairy pets.
It doesn't specify, actually.
Oh, okay.
It could be non-feral, bald pets.
Yeah, they're stroking.
The
paraseal.
Yeah.
Calming.
The thing he was specifically getting to was that pets have a positive effect. Pets and the positive effect of pet ownership after you have a heart attack improves your outcomes. So there was a study called the cardiac arrhythmia suppression trial that they took lots of people from, which its acronym is CAST, and I really wish it could have been cats because they're so close to a pet title. They lost themselves there. Anyway, they found that social support and pet ownership, so non-human social support, were both associated with increased survival after coronary artery disease as a diagnosis.
That'd be a great one for a prescription.
Yeah.
Go and buy a pet.
I know. So what I've written down as a comment for that is I'd really like to see a randomised control trial that gives one group like aspirin and clopidogrel, another group aspirin and clopidogrel and a dog.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be good?
My heart literally just like synced because I hate animals. I'm sorry to all of the animals. And I was like, seriously, we're going to have to start keeping like pets in the pharmacy now.
Maybe you could have a Tamagotchi or something like that. It's not
the Hatchimals. They're really cool. Have you seen those new Fandango things? They're actually like a fluffy animal inside an egg, and they're the newest toy, the craze this year. And you have to pet the egg, and they actually break out, and then you can train. It's like a new age Tamagotchi. Yeah, can't buy one for love nor money this Christmas.
I have not heard of it.
I read it was a social media thing, but it was a really funny little article about a nursing home that teamed up with a pet rescue centre, and basically they put all the rescue pets in with the residents, and everyone got on beautifully, and all the pets sort of calmed down, and they got like forever homes much quicker than they would have done, and the residents reported it was a positive experience.
Didn't they prove that with children as well? Not that they got forever homes, but having a nursery in a nursing home had this incredible like effect. So there was one kind of one trial that they did where they put a nursery, like nursery age kids, and they just had them in the nursing home, and it was like this incredible thing that happened, that the kids were learning from the residents, and the residents were calming down and everything.
But intergenerational projects are always really successful in the sense of talking to each other.
So he's given examples of another couple of studies that were quite interesting, looking at pets and depression post-MI, so people are less likely to be depressed, have better outcomes, less likely to die within a year of their MI. I'm sorry, Marie, to tell you, you're not going to be in that group. And also some studies with pets and the elderly in general. And there was a big study looking at about 127 people who were over the age of 60, and they did analysis of questionnaire, physiological and biochemical and anthropometric data. I don't know what that is, if I'm completely honest. And found that people did better. Two specific things. One, you might predict that dog owners walked more, so they got more exercise and did better, but also they had lower serum triglyceride levels. Mm. So actually their fat levels in their blood was lower.
Mm. That's where I'm going wrong.
So it's so important to walk.
Yeah.
So first one we'll go with is, it was flat packed and took 4 months to assemble.
Is this a story from your house? Or?
I was just saying it could be my IKEA chest of drawers, but I'm assuming
my
not.
My house has taken 2 years. I wish it was only 4 months. No. It was designed in 6 days.
This is a positive aspect of ageing.
More general knowledge in healthcare related.
Is it a porta cabin that someone bought?
Kind of.
Ooh. Granny Enix.
No.
The Hanbury building at RSCH, but I'm assuming it's not.
That took more than 4 months.
Any more clues?
Okay, it was designed to hold 500 patients, but it actually ended up holding double that.
I want to say, is it a giant bouncy castle? But...
No, they did surgery in India. They went on a train, didn't they? All that eye surgery.
Mm. Okay,
sounds
so
like a really great cruise ship.
Okay, so this is going back a little way. So when Florence Nightingale was in the Crimea War, she requested that the British Army sent her a hospital. So Brunel designed one in 6 days, and they shipped it over and installed it in 4 months. And they planned for it to take 500 patients, and by the end, with a slight addition, it took 1,000 patients.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's a good bit of history.
Without it, I am double what is needed.
Is that water?
Yeah, that's where mine was going, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I take what is whole, I half it, which gives me the total of what is needed.
Now this one's cryptic.
Anyone got any ideas?
Not a clue.
To ensure what is administered is what is prescribed.
Is this morphine in the syringe driver? Like you have to dilute it out. So like, no.
But there are like there's like dose trans. You know, the oral dose to syringe driver dose is different, and then you have to dilute it out to the right amount to put in a syringe driver.
It's much more simple than that.
You really should know this, Maureen.
I'm struggling to follow your doctor mind, if I'm honest.
It is much more simple.
Is it like one of those Complan things?
What, build-up? No.
I have absolutely no idea.
It's a pill splitter.
Oh.
Pills that can be split in half are scored by the manufacturer. And a great example of this is paracetamol you buy over the counter.
Oh.
So without it, I am double what is needed. I take what is whole, half it, which gives me the total of what is needed.
Yeah.
And the last one, to administer what is prescribed.
No. I really, really like that. Mm-hmm. Mairead is basically crying.
Yep. Golden Irish.
Okay, I've got one more we can go with.
Simply because, actually, pill cutters, whilst they have their value, obviously, what a lot of people don't know is that when you... take the medication out of its original form from the manufacturers, it makes it unlicensed.
Mm-hmm.
And so if anything were to happen, quite a lot of, you know, you have no backing at all. So whilst we say yes, you shouldn't modify — that's a really boring pharmacy conversation, sorry — whilst you shouldn't modify it, actually you should be doing things as per the lowest available dose and not modifying drugs at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's really boring, sorry.
No, another little
don't
fact
apologize,
about...
shall I?
Oh, don't remind me.
Another thing I learned about unlicensed medicine.
You'll definitely get a date after this.
Thank you, Sarah Jane. Thank you.
Her picture's on the website.
Loving the support, guys.
What I didn't realise till quite recently was that all medication that is administered via a tube, so like an enteral feeding tube or a rig or a peg, is unlicensed.
Yeah, because you're taking it out, because you have to disperse it, or unless it's a liquid that you're putting it via a tube. But unless the manufacturer actually states it's for enteral feeding, it's all unlicensed. And interestingly, sorry, or not, as the case may be, all medications that are decanted into a blister pack are also unlicensed, because you're taking them out of the original packaging.
Oh,
yep.
So what is learning in third spaces?
Is this like liminal space?
Yes. So you have heard of it. Excellent. Do you want to explain it?
Oh, not really. It's like Ian's favourite thing, and he always says liminal space, and I'm always like, yes, I understand.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think I vaguely get the concept of it, which is where if you have two boundaries of kind of safe knowledge here, or it's kind of outside of that. So what is unknown? It's going into the areas where there isn't anything known. And if, I think, if I'm getting it right, if you're kind of between two people, so if it's kind of between nursing knowledge and doctor knowledge, and you're kind of in the middle, then that's the kind of liminal space of... before we overlap, if you had two circles that were approaching each other before they overlapped, you'd be in a liminal space between the two.
That was well explained for someone who doesn't understand
it. So it's like trans-professional knowledge which can develop and become what is currently undecided, usually through reflective practice.
True MDT
working.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'm so proud of myself. Yeah. There were big risks there that I might get completely. Cool. Okay, so I've got one, which is, the clue is, not all frail people need bacon.
They have high sodium?
No.
Who doesn't need bacon?
I mean, not many people.
Go with another clue.
So I'm going to make up another one, which is, it's a big fat problem for frailty.
So obese frail people don't
eat bacon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come a little bit closer.
I think it depends on what literature you're reading.
You want me to say that again? The occupational therapist said obese frail people don't need bacon.
I don't think they'd be very impressed.
Yeah, I think it depends what literature you're reading. Nice guidance on nutrition advice with obese patients contradicts that of the National Obesity Forum. Guidance
in what way? What's it say?
Oh gosh, this is a good one. So nice, kind of go with still having your five a day, having small amounts of sugar is still sort of okay. Whereas the National Obesity Forum say have absolutely no sugar at all. Have butter, have cream, have cheese, have everything that's full fat, and cut out the refined sugars. That's the problem. And juices, lots of juice has lots of sugar in it, and if you take the sugar through like a smoothie and you remove the fiber, your body will just absorb it, all the sugar, and then you'll get fat from that. Whereas if you have the fruit with the fiber, which would be the skin or in its normal form, then you wouldn't absorb the sugar in the same way.
What isn't there
to be fair, my dad's large and frail, so that's probably
but isn't there an argument to say that, you know, obese patients are certainly going towards morbidly obese patients, they can be considered frail because actually they don't have the functional reserves?
Yeah.
So your question of frail patients don't need bacon is actually wrong, if I'm being my pedantic pharmacist self.
Yeah.
Because I said, who doesn't need bacon? Which is right.
So I said, it's not all frail people need bacon. So people who are very thin would need feeding up, but people who are obese can still be frail, but they wouldn't need feeding up, is my point.
Well, again, I would disagree.
Well, why don't I tell you some of the facts I've written down, and then we can see at the end of it how we feel. So there's something to do with eating well, and actually you can have internal fat as well as external fat, so you can look quite physically lean, and actually your organs are surrounded by fat, and so you're still at high risk of ischemic heart disease and things like that.
Skinny fat.
It's getting fat. So the idea of the kind of fat frailty is that with frailty you have a lower muscle mass and lower bone mass but higher fat percentage. So if you're obese and obviously you have a much higher fat percentage, and the BMI is really ineffective at evaluating the relationship between the body composition, so how much of the body is actually fat, which is what you really want to think about, and frailty. And as you were saying, Mairead, if you've got excess fat around, that can contribute to frailty because you can't get around to do all the things that you need to do, and so actually you become a bit more isolated, your exercise reserve drops down quite a lot, and it increases your metabolic instability. So there are a couple of studies that showed that weight loss...
I stand corrected.
Oh, you don't know the joy. There are a couple of studies looking at weight loss alone decreased markers of inflammation and oxidative damage, which are really important in the process of frailty underlying, and also decreased lipid accumulation in muscles, whereas exercise didn't necessarily do that. It was the nutritional stuff that did. Obviously, combined, it's better. It's a particularly a problem for people with HIV. So there was a study looking at people who are frail with HIV tend to not be skinny and thin and cachectic. They tend to be a bit fuller. And also a study looking at lots of community living obese people, 96% of them are frail between the age of 65 and 80. So actually, just because someone's carrying some reserves with them doesn't actually mean that they can't be physiologically frail underneath. I think it's important to think about. But they can probably still have a bit of bacon, don't quote me.
I have one more.
Okay.
The average person can do this for 33.4 seconds.
Hold the breath.
No. Stand on one leg.
Oh.
Ah, is it?
Wow. Oh.
Just as we finish, I come into my own.
Do you know is the longest old? Time someone no, has stood on one leg for?
Oh, like 60 years, isn't it ridiculous?
76 hours and 40 minutes, oh, which is in 1997 done by someone in Sri Lanka. But there's currently a one-leg physio global balance thing going on across the world that they're trying to get people to actually look at how long they stand for, and encouraging people to do it and review it. And Australia is currently in the lead with an average of 200 seconds, Canada 189 seconds, and the UK coming in third at an average of 167 seconds.
Why is there a drive? Like, what's the benefit of being able to stand for a long time on one leg?
The research shows that it decreases falls, decreases hospitalisation, and improves your rehab outcome.
So I heard about this actually really recently, in the last few days. That it's about
so falls. You cheated. You came into your own, but you cheated.
I cheated by having knowledge in my brain. Okay, yeah, I really cheated. It's about falls prevention, isn't it? Like improving your balance beforehand. So having that reserve going in to your frailer age.
So the expectation isn't that we stand all our frail patients on one leg and see how they go.
SJ?
Well, it still could be used as an outcome measure. So you could look at it as an outcome measure in terms of your management. But yeah, the idea is more about encouraging that healthy aging and well-being. So encouraging people to look at how long they can do it now. And then what we should have done, actually, is we should have all done it in time.
I really want to, like, so I'm such a courage to stand on one foot.
Could you even reach the 33.4?
I'm an ex-Irish dancer.
Oh, she's going to go for the 77 hours.
I'm definitely below that. I have terrible balance.
And then you can add in eyes open, eyes closed, all of that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Cool, so that's been really nice. Thanks everyone for doing this, humouring me. Have a nice Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Bye. The MDT Podcast.